What the EFL and what the FA Cup? A mixed bag this week as the Cup takes centre stage. Coming up on this episode, shocks are plenty with Stevenage and Wrexham claiming famous wins. Norwich get ready for some Wagner love. There's the latest instalment of Posh's Fergie time and more, powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. So here we are then, gang, back again. There will be a little bit of EFL chat, don't worry, but obviously the FA Cup is taking centre stage on this week's show because the EFL teams have powered their way through it. Loads of Premier League teams falling and loads of big upsets for us to talk about as well. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by my two pals who've both been up for the Cup this weekend. Adrian Clark, in a weekend of wonderful games and massive results, you also went to Hull versus Fulham.
I did. It was too polite. It was such a nice game. There was no bad tackles, no blood and thunder, no spikiness at all. It was all a bit genteel, and Fulham cruised past a depleted Hull City to get into the next round. So yeah, I wasn't at the pick of the bunch, that is for sure.
Looked as though you were for some part of Saturday, Sam, but then Wrexham later in the day and Stevenage stole your thunder a bit. But Chesterfield 3, West Brom 3, everybody enjoyed that one, apart from the poor fellow who felt the brunt of Brandon Thomas Asante's elbow.
Jeff King took one in the mush. Are we talking about this later or shall I go?
Yeah, we are. We'll talk about it later. I'm just kind of teeing up a little. That was a good game, wasn't it?
I will tell you what, I haven't been more impressed with any side than I was Chesterfield on Saturday. They were magnificent. More of that to come.
Yeah, good stuff. There's going to be some good teams coming up from the National League for us to talk about next season. That's for sure. All right. I mentioned we are powered by Quinbet. You can head to quinbet.com/promotions to see the latest offers for new customers from our sponsors. So we were all on the FA Cup trail this weekend. We'll talk about that later. But first today, let's round up some news. So David Wagner is the new man in at Norwich. His first game ended in defeat in the Cup against Blackburn at Carrow Road on Sunday. Adrian, we spoke about this last week and you were not convinced. It does feel a bit underwhelming, doesn't it? I mean, that's even before they lost the game on Sunday.
Yeah, for me, it just feels like a convenience appointment. Stuart Webber knows him really well after recruiting him at Huddersfield successfully. Yeah, just the fact that they've got history together gives the impression that no one else was really in the frame for it. It was almost as if, like, what's the point in sort of scouring the market and seeing what deals can be done with other managers? I know I can get Wagner, and I know he's got a decent enough CV where we can give him a crack. And it's fair enough. He did okay before in English football, but I think they could have recruited better, personally. And the danger that Wagner has himself is that he's now seen as Stuart Webber's mate. And if there's someone more unpopular at Norwich at the moment than Stuart Webber, I'm not sure I know who they are. The fans really don't like him. And there's a real disconnect between the club and the fans right now. So I think, yeah, if he doesn't get results quickly, the fans could turn on the new guy quite quickly. So yeah, I am underwhelmed.
Sam, one thing I thought was interesting reading the Athletic kind of behind the scenes piece on them appointing them was that they thought that approaching somebody like Mark Robbins or Russell Martin, both big histories with Norwich, would not be considered because it'd be too pricey to get a manager who's already in situ out of his current position. I mean, surely that's worth the cost, isn't it? Particularly when you've got parachute payment money to play with.
You would think so, but I think from the outset it sounded like that paying compensation wasn't going to be an option for them. So that kind of ruled those two guys out straight away. I'd probably think it would be too early for Russell Martin, although the lure of going back to Norwich would have been too strong for him to turn down, you would imagine. But I'd like to see him have another year trying to achieve with Swansea before that move materialising. Robbins is a strange one, I suppose. Maybe people are a little bit snobby towards Mark Robbins and think that maybe he hasn't got it to go and take one of the clubs that are jostling to get into the Premier League and get them promoted. And he's better, you know, fighting against the odds with lesser resources at Coventry, which he's done brilliantly well. So, yeah, that they surprised. Wagner, every time I saw them, albeit it was probably in the Premier League, Huddersfield, they played with real intensity and they closed and harried, etc. They always missed the goal scorer. You know, I think that was obvious to everyone they came up to Huddersfield. So going into a club that have got the best goal scorer in the Championship, arguably, maybe it could work. And famously, they went up with a minus goal difference, didn't score a goal. Well, they did score a goal, sorry, in the playoffs. Tom Lees scored an own goal for Sheffield Wednesday, and he scored an own goal for Huddersfield at the weekend, which was something I found when I was scrabbling around trying to find out some things that I'd forgotten about David Wagner. So we'll see. It's a safe appointment rather than an exciting one, isn't it?
Yeah, he's already gone on record as saying he wants to change the energy. He wants to press with real aggression. He wants to be more attack-minded. It did have 26 shots against Blackburn, albeit severely defeated Blackburn in that 1-0 loss. So, yeah, the intent, I don't think it was a terrible performance the other day. Let's give him a chance. It just feels like an easy option rather than maybe the best candidate.
Well, that leads me nicely on to our next managerial move. Talking of easy options, Peterborough United have reappointed Darren Ferguson for a fourth spell as manager until the end of the season. This is after the sacking of Grant McCann. Ferguson resigned from his third spell in charge last season with Posh bound for relegation to League One. McCann got the boot after a run of one win in seven league games. Co-owner Jason Neal said, "When you look for a manager in January, it's an impossible time to get someone in. So if you were to write down what you'd want in a manager, someone who identifies with how you work as a football club, someone who's had multiple promotions, where would you find a manager like that? It just so happens we have one that lives nearby and has agreed to come and help us until the end of the season." Sam, what happens if he gets them promoted then? Does he just walk away again?
No chance. He leads them to mediocrity in the Championship. No, mediocrity sounds like they're staying up in the Championship in my eyes. It leads into an inevitable relegation fight and gets replaced midway through next season. It's strange, isn't it? Yeah, he replaced by McCann. Strange, because he was quite outspoken, I think, when they were in the Championship about the lack of investment, lack of ambition, I think, in the signings that were made. So yeah, it didn't seem to end all rosily last time, but I can understand it for the purposes of this. And I think that the majority of the supporters sound like they're on board. I don't think the squad is probably as strong as the previous time that he got them out of the division. If you remember, Schmodix was there, and I think you had Issa the previous season, Beavers. There were some good players that aren't longer at the club. So I think this is a tough challenge, but if he can get them in the playoffs, you never know, because we know the firepower they've got. I'd imagine that we might see a bit more of Marriott and Clark Harris in tandem. He liked the 4-4-2 diamond, so that might be the way that he goes. And we know that they like scoring goals, don't they, at Posh? And Darren Ferguson historically has been able to free those front players up, so could be a fun ride.
Mark, have you got a theory as to why he's never really done it anywhere else? Doncaster and Preston, the two other clubs that he's managed. Is it just a case of this is the fit for Darren Ferguson?
He didn't do very well at Preston. He did get promoted with Donny in 2017, so from League Two. So that isn't to be sniffed at. I don't know. Sometimes you find an owner, a chairman that you click with. Your style of football fits with the club ethos, and yeah, I don't know. It does seem like a good fit, certainly at League One level. I mean, it is easy to take the Mickey here and just say, "What are you doing, Posh?" There are other managers around other than Darren Ferguson, but he's got promoted in each spell that he's been at Peterborough out of League One. So I can get the logic of, well, he's done it every time before. Let's see if he can make it four in a row. So, but Sam's bang on. This Peterborough team isn't as good. They're definitely not that stable defensively, and they don't seem to be scoring as many goals as they have traditionally at this level. I think to get in the playoffs, you normally need 70 plus points. I think it's doable. But they're going to have to make improvements on what they've produced so far. They're going to produce sort of almost automatic promotion form to get into the playoffs this season, because there are some proper teams around them, some big clubs this year. I think this is as hard as it's been in League One to actually make it into the top six.
Yeah, they're ninth, 5 points off the playoffs. He's got to wait till this time next week, Monday, for us, for his first game. It's away to Port Vale. And now elsewhere, the transfer window is open. There have been a few deals involving EFL clubs that have caught the eye. One of them, Adrian, Aaron Connolly, loan from Brighton to Hull. You saw him play for half an hour on Saturday. I feel like this is a really big moment in Aaron Connolly's career because he burst onto the scene, didn't he, for Brighton and made a bit of an impact in the Premier League a few years ago. Then that loan at Borough last season, which didn't go well. One at Venezia earlier this season went even worse. He was an Irish full international, still is, but then has been busted back down to the under 21. So this is a pretty significant moment in his career, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You say he played at the weekend. I don't remember really seeing much of him, to be honest. I mean, he was out there. Didn't do anything, really. And that's not to say that he won't, of course. When he first burst onto the scene, he was really eye-catching, wasn't he? He was energy. He was here, there and everywhere, making runs off defenders, closing them down. He was a breath of fresh air. Can he rediscover that and marry that energy with goals? That is the big question. Don't know. I don't know about Hull. I don't know how many goals they're going to score this season. They tend to only play one up front as well. 4-2-3-1 is the favoured system for receiving you. And he's got Estepinan, who is the top scorer. He'd probably have Benjamin Tete in behind him. You've got Tyler Smith as competition. So, no, he'll get game time, but don't know. 2 goals in 19 appearances for Borough. 13 of those were starts. I think I'm right in saying he's not scored more than 4 goals in a season yet. So he's got a lot to prove, I think, Aaron Connolly. I can see why Liam Rossini's gone for him. But I think it's a long shot for him to tear it up in the second half of the season. Yeah, interested to hear what Sam thinks.
Yeah, just to add, Rossini knew him from when he was 16, Connolly at Brighton. So there's that history there. And in terms of a roll of the dice, if it is indeed, you know, a real big chance for him to get going again, to do it with someone that you know and trust your ability and has faith in you, then it's probably a good move for both parties and could reignite him.
What about Cameron Archer on loan from Villa to Borough, Sam? 7 championship goals at Preston last season, really key for them. He's played 6 times in the Premier League for Villa this season, albeit off the bench. I guess Borough fans might be concerned / hoping that he is to complement Tchouba Akpom rather than replace him because he's been linked with a move away this month.
Oh, has he? I didn't know that, but I'd be surprised if he's going to jump ship now, considering how happy he looks and how he's been speaking about Carrick.
Found a manager that gets the best out of him. Why leave?
Yeah, and you know him better than me, Clarkey, but there's undoubted quality there and it's come out in abundance. I think this is as good as it gets, really, doesn't it, in terms of a championship loan move? Yeah, everyone in the championship probably would have taken him, I would imagine. Obviously, he's got that history of Preston and Ryan Lowe was desperate to do it. And Middlesbrough, I've obviously had a bit of a reshuffle. Akpom's been playing, you know, withdrawn. Crooks played up front really successfully and got those couple of games goals last time out. But yeah, to add another talented, quality front man, that just improves their chances of making it into the Premier League this season. And they're coming from deep, we know that, but the form, the momentum that they've got, and this is a top signing for the level, you know, I think that will improve them no end.
Clarkey, 2-time European champions Nottingham Forest feeling particularly generous toward Blackpool at the moment. Let them wallop them in the FA Cup on Saturday and also have loaned back Josh Bowler. So Forest signed him in the summer, sent him straight out to Olympiacos. He's barely played for them, albeit he did make a couple of appearances in the Europa League, but he hasn't managed a 90 minutes for them. A strange transfer at the time when he went out there, but he'll be glad to be back at Blackpool for the rest of the season, won't he? And they'll certainly be pleased to have him.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's worked out okay, isn't it? I'm sure his wages have been bumped up nicely. He's had a little bit of time in Greece and now he comes back to where he feels really, really comfortable. We loved him, didn't we? We've spoken about Josh Bowler a lot, the way he runs with the ball, the way he makes things happen. It's just funny, isn't it, how a move can kind of just stall your career. It doesn't always work, does it? Gets the move to Forest. They don't want him. You know, they loan him to Olympiacos, who probably don't know who he is. You know, in truth, you know, the owners said, oh, this is a guy from England. Here he is to the manager.
Well, I think maybe the fact that they had Carlos Corberan at the start of the season, that was probably part of the thinking, wasn't it? But then as soon as he gets biffed, it becomes a different thing for Bowler.
It was an early biff, wasn't it, for Corberan? Yeah. Look, he hasn't really done much in Olympiacos. Blackpool's a good fit for him. Appleton's also brought in Morgan Rogers, hasn't he, who did so well for him at Lincoln a few years ago. So two decent wide players in the building to complement the strikers. Obviously, Jerry Yates is having a terrific season. So it's all about the ammunition. Can they supply that for Yates? And with Bowler, you also know you're going to get goals as well. So I think this is a really good move for Blackpool. How far it takes them, don't know, but it should help them steer clear of that relegation zone.
Sam, if you're a Blackpool player, what kind of banter are you throwing Bowler's way when he comes back into the training ground? I'm thinking maybe smash a plate when he comes in, put some Ouzo in his water bottle, put the Grease Megamix on, something like that.
Probably just quizzing him about their cuisine. I am a huge fan of a mezze and a souvlaki. Oh, yeah. Me and my girlfriend, we seek out London Greek eateries often. We've got a wonderful one in Kingston. Wonderful one in Kingston. We go for a souvlaki with the chips in there, you know, the meat. Just love the salad in there, love the chips in there as well. Bit of hot sauce, bit of ketchup, dreamy, bit of oregano. Often have Greek nights at home. Don't smash plates.
Why Greek over Turkish? Just out of interest. I mean,
we holidayed in Greek islands a lot. And just love the cuisine. We did flirt with the idea of going to a Turkish restaurant on Saturday night. Funnily, you should mention it, Clark. We went to the Lebanese, a couple of doors down.
Ooh, never done that. Never done a Lebanese. No.
It's a staple.
If either of you two are ever in Southeast London or anybody listening, I would highly recommend. They're often at Dulwich Hamlet. I Should Be Souvlaki, which is a brilliant name. Well, obviously, Kylie Minogue, but they do wonderful souvlakis as well. Anyway, they don't sponsor the podcast, so
I don't know what a souvlaki is. I mean, call me naive. What is a souvlaki?
It's like a wrap with usually some sort of grilled meat plus chips plus salad and maybe a bit of coleslaw and herbs inside it. It's a fancy wrap, essentially.
Coleslaw. What's he produced there? Coleslaw.
Well, I've had one with coleslaw in. They still make them.
I don't want to go down this road at all, but I don't know what like souvlaki actually translates as, but I think souvlaki might just be the meat on the skewer. Do you know what I mean? But I'm with you, Matt, in my mind when I'm, you know, out eating in London, a souvlaki would be the wrap.
What a cultured man you are. Souvlaki literally means skewer. It's self-borrowed from the Latin subula. There you go, listener. Something you didn't
crossover pod you. This, isn't it? Culinary slash footy. Love it.
Culinary cups, sort of. That's me linking to the fact we're going to talk about the FA Cup next. Right, after a thrilling third round weekend, Manchester City, the favourites to win the FA Cup with Quinn back. They're 9-4. You can have Spurs at 7-1. Clarkie won't be doing that. And if you fancy Wigan to repeat their 2013 triumph, that's a 250-1 shot. I did have a look for the odds for Stevenage to win, but I couldn't find them on Quinn bet. And I don't think that anybody was expecting them to be in the conversation. The biggest shock of the weekend, a stunning late comeback, saw them knock out Aston Villa at Villa Park. Clarkie, you absolutely love to laud Steve Evans and his tactical masterclasses, and the floor is yours to do so.
Yeah, this is up there with the great third round shocks, in my opinion. This is an incredible result and performance, unbelievable resolve and character from them. And they deserve their day in the sun. Look, it's no secret. I detest Steve Evans's hostile style of management. I hate the way he tries to get under the skin of everybody, opponents, managers, refs, etc. But he's a good manager. His teams always run through a brick wall for him. They're fit. They're well organised. They've got great camaraderie and quality as well. I mean, I saw them at Kingsling in the last round and I was really, really impressed. Played good football as well. It's not just long ball stuff. They've got some good players that can play through the thirds. And we saw that from the highlights of this cup tie. They really gave Villa some problems. So kudos to them. Big performances all over the pitch. Jake Reeves, I think, was maybe the star man everywhere in midfield. At the top end, I thought Luke Norris was great. Almost scored a worldie, didn't he? With that curler. He also set up a disallowed goal. At the back, Van Kooten was a bit of a monster. And obviously the hero was the sub, Dean Campbell, on loan from Aberdeen. You know, wins the penalty with a turnover and then scores a great near post winner. I mean, I don't know what Villa are doing, sort of letting them create a 2v none at a short corner. But boy, did he make the most of it. I was looking at Dean Campbell, Aberdeen's youngest ever player. 16 years, 1 month and 23 days. He's now in his early 20s. And yeah, obviously it hasn't worked out for him at Aberdeen. That's why he's on loan. What a moment for him. What a moment for the club. Couldn't be happier.
59 places between them in the league ladder. Sam, they've got Stoke away in round four. And I guess dependent on what kind of team Stoke put out, if they make the mistake that Villa did against Stevenage by shuffling the pack to that extent, they'll have half a chance of pulling off another shot, won't they?
More than half a chance, yeah. It's just getting the balance, isn't it? Because obviously the priority has to be getting out of the league. But, you know, the chairman who was in there dancing away with the staff and the management after the game, rightfully so, he won a few quid, wouldn't he? A few extra quid. And now they've got the manager and the team, it would seem, to achieve this type of result. Absolutely no reason why they can't go there and win. And yeah, I thought it was a tactical masterclass. I thought they basically just tried to stay in the game, didn't they, for 70 minutes. And then his changes a little bit earlier than that actually had the required effect. Two subs scored. Jamie Reid, former teammate of mine from Exeter, obviously playing against Ollie Watkins. They both came on as subs, and I've seen some nice footage on Tom Nichols' Instagram. He was up at the game, obviously former Grecian himself, and the two of them were warming up side by side and obviously got on together. Jamie scored. Ollie did not cover himself in glory. He's the player coming out of the box, as Clarkey says, when Dean Campbell gets the strike away, he kind of ambles out. Could have done a lot more. So thought that was a nice part of it. But yeah, the subs.
What
really...
about Jamie Reid's celebration? He gave it some, didn't he?
You know, well, do you know
packed,
what?
Packed away it, packed home end.
When we finish here, Clarkey, go and look at the Instagram post. I think I saw it on Twitter. I can't remember. They're in a box. Tom Nichols and some of Jamie's mates, maybe might be Ollie Watkins's box, but they're obviously above the Villa fans. So he's gone over there rather than go to the right to celebrate with the Stevenage fans. I presume his muckers were in the box. So he's gone there and he's actually looking up at them rather than taunting the home supporters.
Good knowledge, so, that, mate. Good knowledge.
So I thought that was quite a nice, obviously, little Exeter tie in there. But yeah, I just thought, yeah, good tactically from Steve Evans. Kind of gave Villa the wide areas as well, three centre halves, and then the substitutes being a bit more bold at 1-0. You can do that in a cup tie, and yeah, great way to win it.
Also on Sunday, Cardiff let a two-goal lead slip against Leeds in South Wales. Sonny Perkins got a 93rd-minute equaliser after Rodrigo had missed a penalty not long before that. Joel Bagan sent off for handball. Cardiff will be rueful about this, Adrian, but I was looking at the stats. I watched most of the game. Leeds had 74% possession and 26 shots at goal, so they should have just won the game anyway, right?
Maybe. Yeah, a lot of those came after half-time, I would imagine, when they really did up the ante, Leeds. It was just such a shock, wasn't it, to see Cardiff 2 up? They've had 13 home games in the Championship, scored more than one once. Amazing, you know, to then score two in quick succession against a Premier League team. I think sometimes you've got to say well done to the opposition, and Leeds, backed by brilliant support, really did pile it on, didn't they? it was an excellent comeback from them. Just quickly on Cardiff, that Rina Mota pass for Shea Ojo's goal, I thought was super, beautifully weighted little chip pass, the touch and half volley, stupendous really from Ojo. So that was a great moment. But and the other big moment was the red card, wasn't it? It looked to me like Joel Bagan had pulled off one of the saves of the season with that left hand when of course Rodrigo missed the penalty. You thought, well, that's one of the best, I'll take one for the team, red cards ever.
Since Luis Suarez in the 2010 World Cup, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it was one of those moments. But then Sonny Perkins sort of stabs home that equaliser at the end. So, yeah, it was a great cup tie. Absolutely brilliant. I haven't been to Cardiff in a long time, and I haven't watched 90-minute matches too often this season for Cardiff. But I'd imagine that might be one of the most exciting games they've been involved in for quite some time. They're not the best to watch, I don't think, Cardiff this season. But this was a bit of a classic.
Standout result on Saturday at the CBS Arena, where National League side Wrexham stunned Championship Coventry City, coming out the right side of a 7-goal thriller. And this was a thriller, Sam. Incredible result, and still a big upset despite Wrexham's money, right? You know, one team's non-league, one team's Championship. This is a huge win.
Yeah, of course. Statement victory. That said, I don't feel too surprised today, and I didn't feel too surprised when I saw the result, because, you know, they've got, look at the goal scorers, top quality players, Mullin, Elliot Lee, obviously Pentosa with his missiles coming in from the touchline, and they've got a seriously successful EFL manager in Phil Parkinson. And what Wrexham have also done, this is with the knowledge of just absolutely flying through the documentary in the last few days, just by chance, they've made really good appointments, or they've leaned on people with really good football experience, which is not necessarily what always happens when you get people that haven't got a football background buying football clubs. They've appointed the Burton chief exec, I think it is, and they spoke to Sean Harvey, wasn't it, in the early stages of the takeover, the old EFL chairman or whatever he was. So I think there's a lot of sensible stuff that they've done off the pitch. On the pitch, they rode their luck. I think that was seems to be a feature of a lot of the upsets this weekend, or, you know, some of the games where lower league opposition got joy. You know, 22 shots to 9. I think Casey Palmer hit their woodwork 73 times in this game and missed an open goal in the last minute, scored a wonderful free kick. So yeah, they had to ride their luck, even when, you know, Coventry were down to 10 men, which looked like just about the right decision. But yeah, fair play to them. They're on the up. And given that I saw Chesterfield on Saturday, who are a terrifically good side, that National League kind of race is going to be ever so exciting. The gap surely is shortening and shortening.
And neither of those two are top of the league. Notts County clear at the top. So it shows you the quality that's down there. Clark, in this game, it kind of came to my mind that form can be a great leveler, can't it? We often talk about, you know, the bigger sides mixing up their teams a bit, but Wrexham came into this 17 unbeaten, having won 13 of those. So they would have had belief going into the match that they could get the result that they did.
Yeah, it definitely makes a difference. No matter what level you're at, if you keep winning, you're buzzing, aren't you? And they would have thought, yeah, we fancy this. If you go into that cup tie on the back of a bad run, you're almost dreading it. You're thinking, oh, you know, can we keep the score down? But no, they would have fancied it. Obviously, they've got those long throw weapons from Bentosa, which always give them a chance. Good forward players with EFL experience as well. So no, they went for it. And I love to see that. I love it when underdogs are bold and they go for goals. And like Sam says, they can ride their luck at the other end. I don't think this was that bad from Coventry. It will feel really embarrassing. And obviously at 4-1 down, you want the ground to swallow you up, don't you? But I wouldn't be too discouraged. They couldn't have thrown more at it than they did in that second half. They absolutely went for it. And even with 10 minutes at the end there, they could have easily equalised. Casey Palmer was outstanding. I just think sometimes if you take one key player out of a team, it can upset the equilibrium. And for Coventry, that player is Carl McFadden. When he plays, I just think they're so much more resilient, so much better organised. He's a proper leader at the heart of that back four. Take him out, give him a rest, or he's injured. There's a bit of a fragility there. The others not quite, they don't bring as much to the table. So I think that, and obviously the fact that they changed keepers, just unsettled them from those corners and long balls and crosses when they come into the box. So those little fine margins that can make the difference.
Yeah, not a great day for Coventry, particularly with the news that Fabio Tavares, who got a rare start here, will miss the rest of the season. He's ruptured his Achilles. He did that on Saturday. League One, Sheffield Wednesday dumped out high-flying Newcastle United at Hillsborough. This was an absolutely terrific evening's entertainment. 6 o'clock kickoff. Settle down with your tea and watch this. Absolutely loved it. If VAR had been in effect, though, Clarkie, we might not be talking about an upset here. We might be talking about a different result.
We would. It'd be 1-0. 1-0 Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, fair.
Because the Newcastle goal, Guimaraes was offside, wasn't he, from the flick on at the corner. So it levelled out. It was fine. Yeah, I was there the weekend before, wasn't I? Well, actually, the Monday before, when they walloped Cambridge and Josh Windass got a hat-trick that day. Obviously, gets a brace here. Almost got a hat-trick with that brilliant free kick as well that rattled the crossbar. What I'm not sure about is the no celebration. Did you see that? Mm. I mean, I asked someone at Hills because it weirded me out at the time against Cambridge. I'm like, has he got the hump or something? What's going on? He's just scored a hat trick and he's standing there. And I was told that he thinks, I'm playing League One football. It's not where I want to be. I'm not going to celebrate. He almost feels like, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not going to start celebrating goals until the team and myself are back where I think we should be, at least in the second tier, which I thought was a bit odd. And if he can, surely a giant killing of Newcastle qualifies for getting it sighted, but he stuck to his guns. But yeah, great finish, great second goal. Smith releases him. Smith's a really good player, isn't he? He puts him away, and it's a cracking finish. They needed one of those famous FA Cup misses from Chris Wood. That was a bit of a shocker towards the end when he blazed over. But yeah, now Wednesday, as I said on last week's show, they aren't a bad team. It's falling into place for them. They play some good football. Hard to score goals against. Mark McGuinness, that's the worry. Will he stay? Will he go back? There's strong rumours that he could get recalled by Cardiff. He's a key man for them.
18 games unbeaten all comps now. Chef Wed. I don't like that from Windass.
Just a quick one on the keeper as well. I thought he was brilliant, Cameron Dawson. Stockdale was brought in, wasn't he, from Wickham last summer to be the number one. And he wasn't having an absolute torrid. He was doing all right, but not brilliant. That's a big call from Darren Moore to drop him for Cameron Dawson. It's paid off. That is a tough decision, upsetting a senior player like that. Someone you've brought in, but he's seen something in Cameron Dawson, and he's been in outstanding form. And in this match, whew, sensational.
On Windass, Sam, he's been there for 3 seasons as a permanent player. They've been in League One all that time. It can't be a surprise to him. I preferred Balotelli's "I don't celebrate because scoring goals is my job. A postman doesn't celebrate when he successfully delivers a letter." Did you ever not celebrate a goal?
A couple of times if I was having a stinker and just like, even that hadn't cheered me up because I've been appalling. But a few times. But no, I'm not having that at all. I wasn't having him after the game, to be honest. I think Ailey Barber asked him a couple of questions and he did like, "I can't hear you. Just you can hear. Come on. You know the gist of it. Come on, just give the answer." I thought that worked the interviewer rather hard when she was posing a few questions. But yeah, that sounds awfully, awfully odd, doesn't it? I presume he had a Geordie grandparent.
No, because like he's just scored a hat trick against Cambridge. Maybe because it was so easy, I thought, well, maybe it's because it's easy, he's not celebrating. But it wasn't easy against Newcastle. And this local journalist that I got chatting to just said, yeah, no, we think it's because of that. He's not fallen out with anyone, to their knowledge. It's very odd.
Putting the ass in Windass, you might say. Incredible end to a bonkers game at the Technique Stadium, where West Brom left it late to earn a replay against National League side Chesterfield. Tell us all about this then, Sam. I mean, you've got a limited amount of time to do so, because this was an incredible game. That had, I would say, dipping into my big book of football cliches, everything.
First thing, I think when you get a National League side playing against a Championship side, and you get the team sheet, as we did, I'm looking at Chesterfield and I'm thinking that's probably going to be a 4-5-1. They're probably going to be nice and compact and play on the counter-attack. My goodness me, they took the game to West Brom from the first minute, albeit they conceded, I think, without touching the ball. Thomas Asante scored. But Chesterfield just played, you know, like the higher league side. It was really great to see. Lovely passing football. They knew when to slow the game down and have a little bit of possession, but I was so impressed with the quality and so many balls cut back. I don't think I'd seen it as often as I did in this game. So many bodies in the box. Honestly, the football in the first half was brilliant, especially down the right-hand side. They've got this lad, Jeff King, who I think was an attacking midfielder, sometimes centre-forward at previous clubs. He's a right-back. He's got 8 goals. I think the same amount of assists in the National League. Him and Mandeville down the right were absolutely brilliant. The centre-forward, Quigley, is keeping out this lad, Shamanga, who I think is on the cusp of a Championship move. He's got something like 35 goals in 55 appearances since he's been at Chesterfield, and he can't get in the team at the moment. Quigley was brilliant, old-fashioned type centre-forward, but at no stage did he get isolated. The two wide players get in and join in with him because the two full-backs supply loads of width. So they were just fantastic to watch. They ran out of a little bit of steam, and of course, West Brom essentially ended with a first team. DK came on, Malumbi, Wallace, Yokoslu. So by the end, they were hanging in a little bit, Chesterfield, to be expected. But, you know, 3-2 up, last knock into the game. And obviously Thomas Asante elbowed King, trying to make his way into the box. Should have been red carded. He goes on and scores an unjust equaliser. And I think the most ardent of West Brom fans would say that Chesterfield deserved to win that game on their performance over the two halves. Really, really good. A couple of other guys to pick out. Akinola on loan from Arsenal. This was a display with the all-action kind of defensive enforcer attributes, but with that sprinkling of ability going the other way as well. Go past people. He was really impressive. And I don't think he's played too much first-team football, if memory serves me right, from looking at the stats. And the other one, Dobra. Paul Cook had him at Ipswich. Bit of the Ilias chair about him. Kind of wriggles away from people, shoots from distance. Really impressed with him. Tricky customer. And obviously didn't work out for him at Ipswich. But when you've got that relationship with a manager, he gets a gig elsewhere. Paul Cook takes him and he looks like he's going to be a league player again with Chesterfield, or I'm sure someone will take him in the near future. So well done, Cookie. Not just because he used to come on our show, but he's doing a fantastic job there.
Yeah, goodness knows what kind of condition his voice was in at the end of that game. He didn't do the post-match, which will probably give you some kind of clue as to that. So we briefly touched on Hull v Fulham, where you were, Clarkie. Tell me something about it in 30 seconds that we don't already know.
Look, they play good football, actually. They really passed it through the thirds. Some really good long diagonals. McLaughlin at the back did pretty well. The fullbacks were decent enough. But I just want to see a bit more bite. It was a team, Hull, that tactically played how their manager wanted them to. And I think he would have been pleased with how they followed his instructions. At no stage did I ever think they were playing to win the game. It was almost as if they were playing to impress the coach rather than to actually unsettle Fulham and to do things that might get them a goal. I just think if they can add a bit of aggression and bite to their team, then they'll be okay. But this was, you know, severely depleted Hull City as well. So maybe I shouldn't judge them too much. But yeah, no one really was above a 6 out of 10.
Right, that was the FA Cup. We'll have a look at a couple of the EFL games that took place next. There were four games in League One. Bolton, Plymouth finished goalless. The other three all ended 2-1. Wins for Bristol Rovers at Cambridge, Morecambe against Cheltenham, and the game we're going to focus on, which was at the Valley. First half goals from Scott Fraser and Corey Blackett-Taylor got the job done for the Addicts here. Charlton 9 points off the playoffs, having played two games more than six Barnsley. So still lots to do. But Sam, it's been a while since we've talked about Charlton with any kind of positivity around the club. And obviously we're recording this pre the trip to Old Trafford in the League Cup this week. But it does feel like there's a little bit of momentum now with Dean Holden.
Yeah, totally agree. I think this is the second time they've had back-to-back wins. They won three on the spin in October. I think he simplified things a little bit, is my take. Less playing out from the back, not as risky probably as they were, especially when I didn't feel they had the calibre of player to do so. Winning a lot of second balls, that's where the first goal came from. Scott Fraser winning a ball in the middle of the pitch, getting it wide and getting in the box. I think the Lincoln goalkeeper probably should have done better, but Scott Fraser rediscovering his form that he showed, you know, previously in abundance at MK Dons and at Burton. Lovely second goal. Corey Blackett-Taylor, real frustration of mine that he doesn't produce on a more regular basis. But with him and Rakzaki in the wide positions, got loads of pace, directness, and I thought that was a big difference. Those two with Leeburn, you know, that's a really nice trio at the top end of the pitch. And it shouldn't have been as hairy as it was this game. Mandrew scored one for Lincoln and just whistled one past the post in the last few seconds when Lincoln had improved in the second half. So I think this probably should have been a more comfortable route to 3 points, but yeah, excellent start from Dean Holden, you know, given the plight when he took over.
Scott Fraser reminded me of Granit Xhaka. He just playing in that left side box to box role. There's a bit of the old Xhaka about him. I thought, yeah, he's a good player, isn't he? He's always had that excellent left foot. But yeah, finally, he's got a manager that seems to be getting the best out of him. Completely agree with Sam about the pace out wide. Putting Blackett-Taylor further forward with Rakzaki, that's a smart move.
And meanwhile, in League Two, there were 7 games on Saturday. We'll focus on the one that went down at the Peninsula Stadium. Salford beat fellow promotion chasers Northampton 2-1. I had to check this, Clarkey, and then check it again, and then check it a third time. But this was Salford's first home league win since August.
It's mad, isn't it? It is crazy. Yeah. It's considering that they're still doing okay, you know, isn't it? They're still in with a chance of promotion. You normally expect them to have racked up plenty of home wins by now. They've not been full of goals, have they? Matt Smith's the top scorer with 5. I was looking at both these teams, actually. These are the sort of overachievers in terms of scoring goals when they're not that creative. Salford have scored 31 goals this season, but XG is 22. Wait for it on Northampton. They've scored 37 goals, but their XG is around the 20 mark. So there's a team that's far more efficient or absolutely efficient in and around the box. You know, they're not wasting hardly anything, Northampton. So, yeah, that was a point of interest. I think Salford were maybe lucky to win the game. Great goal. The second goal, wasn't it? Where Ryan Watson makes a great run on the counter, slips in Conor McElhinney, and it was a good finish. But yeah, Northampton had more possession than Salford. They were pushing and pushing. I think there was a strong call for a red card on one of the Salford players. And just, yeah, decisions didn't go their way, Northampton. So I wouldn't be too downhearted if I was a Cobblers fan. But for Salford, yeah, play well when you get a result when you're not necessarily at your best. I think that's a good sign for them.
Yeah, Clarkie mentioned it. Should have been a red for Elliot Watt. There was a handball not given as well. Could have been a penalty for Northampton in the second half, and they had a goal disallowed for offside. So I think 3 decisions that went against them, but didn't turn up for the first 45 minutes. But I just wanted to say, Salford have always been coming from deep, haven't they, last few seasons? They've always had games in hand, points to make up, and haven't quite been able to do it. 7th now, so in a good position, and with a transfer window open. If they could add in the right areas, could be the year for them. But yeah,
I think, yeah, Neil Woods also changed the style a bit, I've noticed.
He'll need to with that pitch, won't he?
Sorry?
He'll need to with that pitch.
Oh, that's a bad pitch, isn't it? It's gone. It's absolutely gone. But if you look at the data, it's amazing. Like the number of long moves, over 10 passes that Salford have made, it's far and away the most in the league. Yet I looked at the last 5 games, they've had an average possession of around 46.5%. So I think he's recognised, and maybe the pitch has had something to do with it. He's recognised, you know what, as much as I want us to play pretty football, I think we actually have to be a bit more direct here.
A big smudger up front, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, looking good for Salford. And at some point, there'll be a new manager along to try and really fire them to promotion, one would assume. Right, it's been a slightly different show for us today. No scouting report because we've had so much football to talk about. That will return next week. We're hoping to get a couple of good guests on in the next few weeks as well. So make sure you stick around for those. Before we go today, though, tweet of the week. I think you probably saw this one coming, listener. 66 minutes. Philippe Coutinho comes off. This is from at Stevenage FC. The substitution took longer than usual as they had to dig him out of Luther James Wilding's back pocket. Hashtag AVFC 1-0, hashtag SFC white circle emoji, blue circle emoji. Sam, I normally hate this sort of stuff from admin, but they were losing at the time, which I think gives it a little bit more credence. And actually the replies underneath it from the Villa supporters, "You're losing, mate," says Martinez is the GOAT, for example. "You're losing, fellas." Half.
Who's that? Doubles up as a Wigan fan, that guy.
Maybe, yeah. "Trying absolutely so hard to use his name for retweets," says OK170. So that's quite funny. But yeah, what's your opinion on this? When admin, in the eyes of some, goes a step too far?
I'm not normally a fan of it, but no, I think for the reasons that you've ironed out, you've nailed it there, Matt. They're losing the game, so it's a bit of fun. Have they used his full name there, or is he? It's not a double barrel, is he? That's two Christian names, is it?
I think he's developed a double barrel.
Has he really?
Someone else has done that before.
Yeah. Oh, that's why Matt wanted to go for it today. I'll have to be kind then. Yeah,
he's excellent. A good player. I saw him at King's Lynn, and he was outstanding in that game. So, yeah, what a feather in his cap. No, completely agree with you lot.
Hey, listen, it's a League Two game as well, or a League One game or whatever. It's a yellow, maybe even a red. But considering it's against Premier League opposition, go for it.
You're away to a Premier League team and you're in League Two. You can do what you want on Twitter as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, well done. Well done to Borough.
All right, well, the likes speak for themselves. 92,600 at time of recording. And that tweet, right, Stevenage, let's see how many followers they've got. They've got 76,000 followers. That tweet has been seen more than 4 million times. So I would suggest that admin has probably done his job there and all the sweeter.
Pay rise.
Because they came back to win it. Pay rise indeed. If you want to follow us on Twitter, by the way, we are at EFL What The, and we would appreciate your company there.
Please don't judge us.
You can head to Quinbet. Also, you can head to quinbet.com/promotions to see the latest offers for new customers from our sponsors. If you could rate, subscribe, like, share, tell somebody about this podcast, that would help us out an awful lot too. We do appreciate you doing that. We'll be back next week when our focus will be back on the Football League. Thanks to Sam and Adrian for their expertise as ever today. That'll do us for this edition of What The AFL. We'll catch up with you again next week.